Daf for today is Kuf Nun Gimel. And we'll begin with Amar Rabbi Yehuda on the second line. Brei derav Shmuel bar Shilat Mishmei derav Behespedo shal Adam Nikar im Ben Olam Habahu im La. What is the response of the eulogizer to the eulogizer's eulogy? If they cry and they really feel broken up about the loss of that individual, it means that that individual is someone that we want to emulate because he's going to Olam Haba. And that's why the eulogizer, the maspid, was successful in arousing the tears of the people. The Gemara says, Eini va'amarle rav l'rab Shmuel bar Shilat achim behespedo. Rav, before his passing, he instructed Rav Shmuel that he should arouse the people and get them all passionately heated up through his hesped, so that they would come to cry. Why did Rav have to give that instruction to his Talmud Rav Shmuel if Rav himself understood that a person who is a Ben Olam Haba is guaranteed that the people will cry at his hesped? So he didn't have to instruct his Talmud to passionately arouse the people. I mean, certainly Rav, there's no doubt he was a Ben Olam Haba. The Hasam Ka Imna. So the Gemara answers, Lo Kasha Ha De Mechamulei V'Achim Ha De Mechamulei V'Lo Achim. What it means is that if he's an Odom Kosher, then through the eulogy, the Maspid will successfully get people to be Bocha. But the Maspid still has that responsibility to give a meaningful Hesped and try to define the essence of the person and what that person's personality, what his contribution was. And with depicting it in very inspiring terms, he will be able to arouse the people to cry because that person who died is a Ben Olam Haba. But nevertheless, the Maspid still has to do a good job. But if the person who died is not a Ben Olam Haba, then try as he will, the Maspid, the eulogizer, will not be successful in arousing the people. The people are not upset about someone who is a Rasha, for example, an evildoer, and he left this world. So nobody's going to start crying about that. You know, my father, in his capacity as a Rav, would give eulogies, like any rabbi in America, and he used to have a conference with the family, because very often the chapel would call up my father to officiate at the funeral, and that service began with the hesped in the chapel, but he didn't know the person who died. So he would very often have a conference with them. And in one particular occasion, he tells a true story that there was a woman who died. He had this conference with the family. He couldn't get a word out of them. They were very close-lipped. When he got up to give the hesped, he sort of depicted the perfect mother, the Jewish mother. And people started nudging one to the other. They were like laughing almost, because nothing that he said was appropriate for the deceased. You have to be very careful about giving a eulogy. You know, it's very nice we have these beautiful standard eulogies. My father used to read a poem, if you go first and I behind, you know, all this kind of stuff. But you know, sometimes if you don't know a little bit about the deceased, then it's an inappropriate eulogy. Omale Abai L'Rabba could go Mar Disanule Kulib Padisa Man Achim Espeda. Abai was a Talmud of Rabba. Rabba was very harsh with the members of his city, Pumpadisa. He would constantly give them Musar. And as a result, they hated him. And Abai says to Rabba, who's going to be able to give a hesped for you after you go? After all, you know, the people despise you and you know, a hesped that's going to arouse them to cry, to tears. So Rabba says to Abaye, Misasya at v'Rabba bar Rav Chanan. Misasya means it's enough if either you give the eulogy or Rabbi Bar Hanan gives the eulogy. You are my great disciples, and I'm sure you'll be able to successfully depict me after I go, and you will hopefully arouse the people, and they'll be the maspid has to fulfill his responsibility to arouse the people and get them to passionately mourn and grieve and cry, and you will be able to do so. Boy, mine Rav, Rabbi Elazar, me Rav, Ezu ben Olam Haba. Can you describe a person who is destined to go into the world to come? Amalei. So Rav quoted a pasuk in Yeshaya, and he interpreted this pasuk homiletically in such a way that he could answer the question that was asked him by Rabbi Elazar. The pasuk says, "V'yaznecha kishmana." Dover me'acharecha le'mor zederech l'chubo kisaminu v'chisas milu. Your ears, and here we're talking about the ears of the deceased. You may recall that we learned yesterday that the deceased hears everything that's being said. So he hears the words. He overhears the words of the eulogizer who says zederech l'chubo. That this person who passed away, he is a paradigm of how we should imitate him in his derech, and we should go with his right and with his left. We shouldn't move and deviate from his path, not too far this way, not too far that way. If you hear those words from the eulogizer, you know that you're on your way to Olam Haba. That's the interpretation of Rav of this pasuk in Yeshaya. Rav Chanina Amar, Kol Shedas Raboseinu Nocha Heimenu. It's not enough that people start crying about the deceased. That doesn't necessarily mean a true evaluation that the deceased will be guaranteed a place in the Olam Haba. We want to hear what the Rebbeim say about him. His rabbis, his teachers. Were they happy with him? Do they have a good word to say about him? And if they do, then no doubt he's a Ben Olam Haba. The Gemara now quotes a pasuk in Koheles in that same chapter that we studied yesterday, chapter 12. And the first part of that pasuk, which is not here in the printed Gemara, says, Ki holech adam al beis olamo, a person will go to his eternal rest, v'savivu bashuk hasoftim. And the eulogizers are circling in the marketplace. And the Gemara explains, B'nei Galila Amri, in the tradition of the northerners, what it means is asei dvarim lifnei mitoscha, that the eulogizer should say things in his eulogy in front of the coffin. B'nei Yehuda Amri, in the Judean state, in that district, they had a different formulation, asei dvarim li'achar mitoscha, that the maspidim should speak on the other side of the coffin, not facing the coffin, but the other direction. Velo pligi, it's not a machlokes. They both really are on the same page, just that Marki Asri, there are different traditions, there are different customs that arose. Up in Galil, the custom was that the eulogizer would stand in front of the coffin. In Yehuda was the opposite, the eulogizer would stand behind the coffin. Tanan Hasam, this is a brisa in Avos de Rabbi Nosson. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Shuv Yom Echad Lufnei Misascha. Make sure that you do tshuva no later than the last day of your life. Sholot Talmidav Es Rabbi Lozer V'chiyodim Yodea Li'ezi Yom Yomus. Does a person know when is his death, the day of his death, that he could do tshuva one day before he dies? Omer Lehen, Rabbi Lozer says, Kol Shkein. On the contrary, that's exactly my point. Since he doesn't know which is the last day of his life, Yoshev Hayom, today he has to do tshuva. Shema Yomus L'mochar, because he might die tomorrow.
Rav, when you said that he was in a that the rabbi would stand either before or behind the coffin, but there was no coffin. He was wrapped in takrichin and was on just a.
I think what they used to do is they took you out. The fancy English word is called a bier, I think, B-I-E-R. and then they took you out to burial, and they took the body out of the bier. But there was a coffin, you know, where the mess was located before they took him out for burial. By the way, my father has a whole drasha. We have two of my father's books that he published of drashas during his lifetime. We published a third one in Hebrew for our grandchildren for Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, based on his drashas. But he has a drasha called Hayom, today. It's based on a piyut for Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur called Hayom Tamtzeinu, Hayom Tegadlenu. If you remember that, the Chazon used to sing that. And the basic theme of that is Hayom. That don't postpone things and don't think, oh, I'll do it tomorrow. Today is, you know, your life is today, and take care of it today. So that's the theme here. He says, Nimtza kol yomim b'tshuva. If you think that every day might be your last day on this earth, and Koheles tells you to do tshuva, you know, before you die, then do tshuva every day. And in Kohela, Shlomo says every day your clothing should be clean, freshly laundered, and it should be oil on your head. And these begadim are a metaphor for the neshama. And the neshama has to be guarded carefully in purity and in cleanliness. And therefore, in order to guarantee that your neshama is always constantly in a state of levanim, of purity, you have to do tshuva constantly. The king invited his servants to a big banquet. He didn't tell them exactly when the banquet would take place. So Pikhin Shebahem, the smart ones, Kishtuas Atzman, they wore beautiful clothing because any moment the king might summon them in for this banquet. V'yoshal Pesach Beis HaMelech. They were right there at the entranceway to the palace so that there would be no delay. They're wearing their royal beautiful clothing if they get invited. Amru, they said, Klum chasel beis hamelech. Maybe nothing's missing in the king's palace. Everything was prepared, and perhaps they'll be called immediately, and they won't have time to go ahead and change their clothing, their apparel. Hatipshim shrem holchul melachto. You know, the foolish ones went to work like it was a regular day. Omru, and they declared, Klum yesh suda v'lo torach. Obviously, if the king wants to establish this banquet, he's going to have to do a lot of work to prepare it. So we'll have that period of time, you know, and we'll go back and change our clothes. And then what happened? B'pisom, all of a sudden, without any forewarning, B'kesh ha'melech ha'samadot, he invited and summoned his servants into the banquet hall. The smart ones were ready. Immediately went into the banquet hall. The foolish ones, they didn't have any choice because they were rushed inside, you know, like Haman after that old mice over there. And Hamaluk Lachim, and they were wearing dirty clothing. He was very happy with the smart ones, and he was angry at the foolish ones. Amari declared, Halalu shekishtu es atzma lusu the yesh v'yochlu v'yishtu. Those who are smart and they prepared themselves, let them enjoy the su'uda. Halalu shalokishtu atzma, the foolish ones who did not prepare themselves for the su'uda, yamdu v'yiru. Let them stand and watch how the pikrim are sitting and eating and enjoying this banquet. And this is all a mashal for olam haba, for the eternal world. The tzaddikim will be sitting in the internal world enjoying the spiritual delight of Olam Haba. And the Rishayim, the evildoers, they'll stand and they'll watch. Chasana shel Rabbi Meir Mishum Rabbi Meir Omar Af Heim Nirim Kimishamshim. If that's the punishment for the evildoers, that they'll stand there and watch, well, the spectator might think that really they also deserve to come into the suda. There's just not enough room inside. They won't be embarrassed or humiliated by the fact that they're kilu waiting their turn to go into the banquet hall. El, there's got to be a more severe punishment for the evildoers. Elu v'elu yoshvin. Everybody's going to go into the suda, into the banquet hall. Alolu ochlim. And this group of people called the pikhim, which is symbolic of the righteous, they will be eating away over there, enjoying themselves. we don't take this physically, obviously. Valolu, but the tipshim re'evim, they're hungry. Halolu shosim, valolu tzmein. Can you imagine you're hungry, you're thirsty, and you're watching those who are enjoying life? That's a real busha. That's going to be the punishment for the rishon. And he quotes the pasuk in Yeshaya, Komar Hashem, hinei avadai yochelu v'atem tir avu. My true servants, God declares, will be eating, they'll be enjoying, they'll be basking in the sun of reward. Vatem, and you, the evildoers, you'll be hungry. Hine avada yishtu vatem tinsmo. My true loyal servants are drinking, enjoying the beverages, and you're thirsty. Hine avada yaronu mituv lev vatem tzitzaku mikev lev. My loyal servants are singing out of a gladness of the heart, whereas you are just kvetching, you're yelling and screaming about the pain and the suffering that you're going through. Now, we're going back for a moment to the pasuk in Koheles. Bechol eis yu begodecha levanim. Your clothes should always be laundered. Dover acher, here's another interpretation of that pasuk. Elu tzitzis. This is a symbolic reference to the tzitzis. And it means that the tzitzis are attached to a beged, to a garment that's miluban, that's white. Now it's interesting because the Sfaradim are very makpid on this. You know, that their tzitzis are on a white beged. Our Talis Gadol for Ashkenazim usually has black stripes on it. But it's basically a white garment, and we beautify it with the black stripes. But today there are people who wear blue, green, yellow, every color in the rainbow. The Gemara seems to assume that the beged tzitzis is made of a white, whether it be linen or wool. Shemen al roshchal yechzar elu tefillin. And the other part of the same pasuk says that there should be ample oil on your head. And that's a symbolic metaphor for tefillin. So Rashi and others try to understand, why is this oil on your head a reference to tefillin? And they quote another pasuk in Koheles. It says, Tov shem mi shemen tov. And we're talking about a tov shem, a good name, meaning a status. You have a good status, a good reputation. People admire you, they look up to you. And that's compared to shemen, to the good oil. Now, what does this have to do with tefillin? So the Gemara says in Brachos, it says in a pasuk at the end of Chumash, V'ro kol amei aretz ki shem Hashem nikra lecha v'yaru mimecha, and the nations of the world will behold you, and they'll see that the name of God is inscribed on you, and they'll fear you. And the Gemara says, shem Hashem elu tefillin shebarash. So tefillin is called shem. And our reputation as Jews is a reflection of the fact that we wear tefillin on our head. That gives us the shame. And that's Kishem Hashem Nikra Alecha V'yoru Mimecha. And now we go back to the pasuk in Koheles, Tov Shem Mishem and Tov. So the shame of Tov Shem is a reference to tefillin, meaning tefillin shel rosh. And that's even greater than Shem and Tov. That's greater than the oil. The oil is representative of Chachma, of wisdom. It comes from the olives and so forth. And this ends Perek Shoel, which is the 23rd Perek, Hadron Alecha Perek Shoel, and we now begin the 24th and last Perek of Masechta Shabbos, the Perek of Misha Hechshech. Our Mishnah at the beginning of Perek Misha Hechshech addresses the question of someone who's on the road, it's Erev Shabbos, he's got his money bag, he's got his pocketbook with wads of money in it, and now it's getting dark. Shabbos is about to enter. What are the possible recommendations we can offer him so that he doesn't lose all his money? And we'll see that if we don't give him good recommendations, he may be tempted to carry, you know, on Shabbos itself. So the Mishnah says, Misha Hechshech Baderech, it all of a sudden became dark, and he didn't take into consideration, he's holding a pocketbook. He's no saying Kiso Lenochri. Before the onset of Shabbos, he should give his pocketbook over to a goy. Now, there are a number of issues here. First of all, there's an issue of Amir Liakum. Okay, it's Erev Shabbos, so that's not really Amir Liakum. But number two, there's an Iser Amir Liakum not enjoying the benefit of Molacha that was done as a Shliach by a God. So we see already that the law is flexible here. We're finding an exception to the general rule. We also have to address a slightly different question. What would be, if it's already nightfall, can I still violate Amir al-Nakhri and tell the guy to carry my pocket? Then we have a security question. How do we know that the guy is not going to put his hand into your pocketbook and by the time you get home, what you'll find is an empty pocket? Okay. In any event, what happens in Amir al-Nakhri? There's no guy around. Heinich al-Hamar. He's allowed to tie his pocketbook over to the on the back of his donkey, and whatever he has to do to get his donkey to move, and the donkey will know which way to go. Maybe the owner of the pocketbook will have to stand near the donkey to guide him, make sure the donkey doesn't get lost over here, because he's holding his life savings over here. Now this also is a special leniency, because normally we don't work our animals on Shabbos. And that's called Shvisas Behemto. You may remember that concept that we spoke about more than once. But again, as we'll see, these are all leniencies for the sake of someone whose money, you know, we're afraid, who knows what he's going to do if we don't give him some sort of flexibility here. The Mishnah continues, Higia l'chatzer achitzono, and he's on his way, and it's getting late, and he has a chamor, he has a donkey that's laden with all sorts of stuff, and now they're on the outer courtyard entering into the city. So they haven't yet entered into the city, and what can he do at this point? Notel es hakelim anitolim b'shabbos. He has an animal, a donkey that's laden with all sorts of things. And now, what is he going to do? He's allowed to take off the back of the donkey those kalim that are not mukta, that are mutta betiltul, like a klisha malachta lehefter, if you remember. But ve'enom nitolim v'shabbos, if he wants to remove, it's already Shabbos now, if he wants to remove kalim that he's not allowed to move because it's mukta, then we're going to allow him matir's chavolim. We're going to allow him to loosen the straps of the saddle. V'asakim noflim me'aleihem. And those bags of mukta will fall onto the ground, and he's not directly moving them. So our focus for today is going to be on the resha. What do you do with this pocketbook when it's getting time for Shabbos? So the Gemara says, "My time of Sharulei Rabbanan Lemesiv Kisei LeNochri." How could the Rabbanan allow giving your pocketbook over to the guy, and he is going to carry it on your behalf? After all, then the guy is your shliach; he's doing malach on your behalf, and that's prohibited. And the Gemara answers, "Kimlu Rabbanan." The Rabbanan understood the psychology of a person. He ain't other mamid atzmal mamona. He will not be able to overcome his temptation to save his money. Vilo Sharisle, if you don't find some heter for him, either to let the guy carry it in for him or the animal carry it for him, then Osi Li Suye Arba Amos Bishus Rab, he may come to carry it for Amos Bishus Rab. So in order to violate a violation of an Issa D'Oraisa, they gave him flexibility and leniency to violate a Drabbanon. And that Drabbanon is telling the guy to carry it on your behalf. We'll get to the animal soon. Omar Rava Dafka Kiso Avo Mitzio Lo. Under what circumstances are the Chachamim afraid that if we don't find the leniency, then he's going to actually carry his pocketbook for Amos Brishus Harab? That's only money that he owns. I'll dramatize it and say he worked very hard, this is his savings. But Mitzio, if he found something on the street, he didn't work hard, he's not going to violate the Shabbos and carry that for Amos and Rishus Arabim in order not to lose something that he found. If it's a found object of Mitzia, According to Rav, at least, we'll see that there's a dissenting opinion, but Rav's position is that in this case we don't have to make any leniencies, he's not going to be tempted to carry it and violate a biblical Isur of Havaris Dalet Amos, just a Rav for the sake of a Metziah. Now the Gemara says, well, although I don't necessarily agree to the logic of Rava, but I read the Mishnah, and Rava really doesn't add anything to the Mishnah. Why? Because Pshita, let's read the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Kiso Tnan, it says it's his kiss. He owns the pocketbook, which means he didn't find it on the street. The Mishnah could have used the word Matzah kiss. Instead it says, Kiso. So the Gemara says, if not for Rava, Maldutema would have said, Hu Adin Afilu Metziah. That maybe the Mishnah would apply even in the case of a found object, the Haidik Tani Kiso, and the Mishnah wants to tell me a new Chiddush in the case of his own possessions, meaning his own pocketbook. The Urcha de Milsa Ketani, that, you know, the Mishnah always wants to formulate its din in a common case. And the common case would be a pocketbook. He's traveling, he's got his money in his bag. And that's called in the Gemara's language Urcha de Milsa, Derech Eretz. That's the normal way. And Komashmal means the Mishnah always wants to tell me it's Chiddush in a case which is regular, commonplace, but not in a rare case where he finds a Metziah. But if not for Rava, we could have said that the Mishnah would apply even in the case of a Metziah. And in fact, Ika Diamri, there are others say that we're not sure what would be the law in the case of Metziah. Boy Rava, Rava himself vacillated back and forth. Metziah abol liyado mahu, if he finds a Metziah, comes to his hands. What's the din? Came at the asol liyado kikisei dummy. Once he found the Metziah and he lifted it up, it's like his own personal possessions. What's the difference between this and his possessions? He made a kinyan on it, it's his. And he doesn't want to lose it. He'll be tempted to carry it for Amos and Shazram unless we give him some sort of leniency and some options. O Dilma, Rav had a second side to say, came into Lo Tarach Bel. He didn't do any work. He just happened to find, you know, money in the street. Is Lav Kikisei Dami, even though he already lifted it up before Shabbos and he made a kinyan on it, and it's his, nevertheless, he would not be tempted to violate the Shabbos Teku. And Rav, according to the second version, never came to any conclusion about this. And therefore we should be very careful about all situations. The Mishnah goes on to say, Eini mo nochri, if there's no guy available to carry his pocketbook, then he can have the chamar carry the pocketbook on his behalf. So Gemara says, Taimo di eini mo nochri. The Mishnah has this priority, in which the Mishnah sets your first priority is to find a guy. In event of Eini mo nochri, then we'll allow you to use the donkey. So the Gemara says, Ha'imo nochri, Ha'yesh imo nochri l'nochri yo'evle. Why, my time, why is it preferable to send it with a goy? And the Gemara answers, Chamor ato metzuve al shvisasa. Nochri I ato metzuve al shvisasa. The Gemara assumes now that to have an animal work for you on Shabbos, that's already a violation of a d'oraisa. The Torah says, "Ubayom hashvi tishbos leman yonuach sharcha vechamorecha." And this is the pasuk from which we derive the principle called Adam mitzuval shvisas behemto, that a person is commanded to see to it that his animals are resting on Shabbos, and therefore you're not allowed to do any malacha through your animal, have your malacha do it, and apparently you violate an Issa d'oraisa. Later on we'll see that there's one opinion that says that if he does so and he has his animal work for him on Shabbos, he has to bring a korban chatas. In any event, it's certainly an Issa d'oraisa. So therefore, if we have two choices, we can even have a guy carry our pocketbook for us, and that would be a violation of an Issa d'rabbanon, because the guy is our shliach, he's working on our behalf, that d'rabbanon don't allow. But in the case of Chamar, if we send it on the back of the Chamar, that would be a violation of a Doraisa, of Shvisas Behemto. Now the Gemara asks other questions about priority. There's no guy to be had. Now he has the following choice. He has his animal, Chamar, or he has a human being, a Jew, but that Jew is exempt from the mitzvah of Shabbos and from all mitzvahs. Who is that Jew? He fits into one of three categories. Either he's a Cheresh, a Shota, or a Katan. Now please take note that a Cheresh here is someone who's deaf and he's mute. He's an Eino Shomea V'Eino Medaber. If he's deaf but he speaks, then he has the same halacha, the same status as a Pikeach, he's chayav in all mitzvahs. But if he's a deaf mute, then as a general rule, he is potum in a mitzvah. So there may be an exception in the case of someone who could communicate by writing or by computers and so forth and so on, because again, a cheresh is an eino shomea v'eino medaber. Did you hear me? Alright. Anyway, eino shomea means he doesn't hear. And what's the choice here? The choice is either to send a pocketbook with your chamor, with your animal, or send it with a cheresh shota v'katan. And the Gemara says the following: Achamor manachle lecheresh shota v'katan lo yoevle. It would be preferable to send it with the animal and violate shvisas behemto rather than send it with a cheresh shota v'katan. My timer, why should that be so? After all, a cheresh shota v'katan is not chayav in the mitzvah of Shabbos or any mitzvah. And the answer is hani adam v'hai lav adam. Once you allow another human being to do your malacha for you, a Jew who's technically potter min mitzvahs, then you may come to make that jump, make that confusion, and send it with a Jew who's chayav in mitzvahs. But in the case of a chamor, that's an animal, no one's going to jump to conclusions that since my animal is allowed to work for me, I'm allowed to send another Jew to work for me on Shabbos. Now we have another priority question. Cheresh v'shoteh. He has two options. He can send it with a deaf mute or a shota. And the Gemara establishes l'shota, he should send it with a shota. Because a shota has no das. We'll see later on that a cheresh, even though he's a deaf mute, he has some sort of element of das. He has some intelligence. It may be quite limited. But he certainly is one step closer to being a pikeach than a shota. So therefore we would prefer if you send it with a cheresh, I'm sorry, with a shota rather than with a cheresh. Shota v'katan. This is a fascinating question. What you have two choices. You can send it with a shota. A shota is mature, and if we start confusing him with another person, then we're going to be sending him with an adult. That's a violation of Shabbos. A katan is potter min mitzvahs. But on the other hand, with regard to katan, he will eventually become chayav in mitzvahs. We don't believe that in the case of a shota. Iboilehu, the Gemara has a suffek. So what happens in the case of shota v'katan? L'shota. We'd rather send it with a shota than with a katan, because a katan, again, is very dangerous. You know, the katan may remember that we had a situation of a pocketbook last year when I was only 12, and they had me carry the pocketbook. And he's not going to realize that that was a special heter that they allowed him because he was 12. So now he became 13, and he's bar mitzvah, and he remembers what happened a year ago in the same scenario, and he's going to carry it as a gadol. So therefore, we want to avoid sending it with a katan at all costs, and in this case, we'll send it with a shota. That would be our preference. Iboilehu cheresh v'katan mai. Who should get priority if I have a choice between a cheresh and a katan? So the Gemara points out, I'll leave it to Rabbi Eliezer, lo tiboilach. This question doesn't even arise according to Rabbi Eliezer. Why? Desanya, we learned in a braisa, Rabbi Yitzchak, om mishum Rabbi Eliezer, trumas cheresh, if a cheresh is mafresh truma, and in order to be mafresh truma, you have to be a bardas, is to our surprise, Rabbi Eliezer paskins, and here you'll turn to Daf Kufnun Gimel and Beis, lo teitze lechulin. The truma that he was mafresh should not be used as chulin, meaning if I'm not a kohen, I'm not allowed to eat this. Meaning that Rabbi Eliezer validates, to some extent, the afroshas truma v'cheresh. Why? Mipnei shu safek. Rabbi Eliezer says that the status of a cheresh, a deaf mute in halacha, is that of a safek. We don't know if he's chayiv in mitzvahs or if he's not chayiv in mitzvahs. And therefore, when this cheresh was mafresh truma, we don't know if his truma is valid or not. On the tzad that he has das, and maybe it depends upon each individual cheresh, but if he has das, then his truma is a valid truma. And if a non-kohen would eat that truma, he's chayav misa b'dei shamayim, a terrible violation. So we have to be machmir just in case this cheresh has das. And in the Hebrew translation, he says, Daito mu'etes utzlula. Interesting. On a qualitative level, he has a low quality intelligence level, but tzlula, it's a certain clarity of thought that he has. Again, it's very dull. If you follow the meaning, I don't know what on IQ, maybe he would have an IQ of 80. I don't know what the number would be. But whatever he knows, he knows. And therefore, maybe we should say he's chayav in mitzvahs because relative to his das, to whatever level of what we call das mu'etes that he has a das tzlula. And whatever he's capable of doing, he will do well. And maybe when he performed Afrosh's Truma, he performed it properly with the right kavanas, and therefore the Truma, we have to consider l'chumra that maybe that Truma is Truma. So therefore, if now I have a choice, who should I send my pocketbook with? Whether it's a cheresh or a katan, no question about it, hands down. We cannot send it with a cheresh according to Rabbi Eliezer, because Rabbi Eliezer thinks he might be considered a bar das. He may have that intelligence, maybe he can't communicate with us, but if we would somehow be able to use electrodes and analyze his brain or do any sort of other psychological test, we may come to the conclusion that he has a das tzlula, even though it's a das mu'etes, and therefore he'd be chayv in the midst of Shabbos. Now this Rabbi Eliezer, by the way, is going to be a big chumrah, because let's say this cheresh is married to a woman, and now she wants to get free from this marriage to marry someone else. I don't know if his get is reliable, because if he's like a shota and he doesn't have das, then his get is meaningless. If on the other hand, she wants to say, well, he's the marriage is not a valid marriage because he's not a bar das. Well, that's not so, because Rabbi Eliezer says maybe he is a bar das. We're going to get the chumras in both directions here. So I don't know what's going to happen with this woman, honestly. The Rabbanon, I'll be right with you, reject Rabbi Eliezer, and they're of the opinion that a cheresh, who's a deaf mute, is completely out. He does not have the status of a suffolk. This not because we learned in the Mishnah in Trumos, Chamisha lo Yitrumu, there are five categories of people who are excluded or disqualified from a Farshas Truma, the Imtarbu Ein Trumas and Truma. And even b'di'evit, if they went ahead any of these five categories, they were mafresh truma, we don't recognize the validity of the truma. The eluhein, and the first of the list of five, that's the one that's relevant to us, is cheresh. Which means that if a cheresh was mafresh truma, according to the Mishnah, in the first parak of trumas, the truma is not valid at all, and therefore a non-kohen can eat from this truma. It means that the status of a cheresh is identical with that of a shota, and shota is actually the next category of the five.
So I was going to ask, with regard to the cotton, aren't you mitzvah or have a chiyuv in terms of chinuch at that age, which will run counter to
well, you're going to give him to you see, it? Jerry, when it comes to truma, we're dealing with a very sensitive issue. You're right, if it comes to a mitzvah like Ner Chanukah, obviously I want to train my child, even though he's a katan, I'm obligated to do so. But when it comes to Truma is very complicated. Why? Because the Hafrosh, if we recognize it and validate it, means that the rest of the wine or grains, whatever is now chulin. So you got to be very careful if you want to train a child in the mitzvah of Hafrosh's Truma. You may give him lessons and show him diagrams, but I don't think you want to have the child be Mafresh Truma because...
I was thinking the example of carrying from before.
Oh, of carrying, then we have to be very, very serious about that. To allow my child to carry a kiss on my behalf...
Exactly.
That's something that I want to avoid if possible at all costs. If my older alternative is that I, the father, is going to carry it, then we'd rather send it with the child. And that's what's going to happen when a person is bol al mamono. You know, he's so concerned about his life savings. So you know what? The lesser of two evils is to be sending with a katan. But if you have a choice between a cheresh and a katan, which one of the two should you use as your shliach to carry the kiss? That's going to be machlok stream Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim in the Mishnah in Trumos. Because Rabbi Eliezer, who's going to recognize the hafrash of a cheresh, and the status of a cheresh in Rabbi Eliezer's frame of reference is a sofek pikeach, then when it comes to Shabbos, there's no way, no how Rabbi Eliezer can allow you to send it with a pikeach, with a cheresh who's a sofek pikeach. But if you're like the Chachamim, who say ein truma so truma, and the hafrasha of a cheresh is meaningless, it's totally invalid, that means that a cheresh doesn't have das, he's not a sofek bar das, and therefore he's excluded from all the mitzvahs. And in such a case, there may be an advantage to sending it with the cheresh as opposed to a katan, because if the katan remembers later on, when he gets a gadol, that they, you know, he doesn't realize that what they did, as I said before, what they did earlier was just a, that was because he was only in a training situation. He was in trainers. But anyway, let's go through the five categories of individuals whose truma is hafrosh is totally invalid. Number one is a cheresh. Number two is a shoteh. Number three is a katan. Number four is a toreim es shein shalo. And number five is a nachri shetoram es shel Yisrael afilu bershuso. Now, let's go over the third and fourth categories. The third category was toreim es sheino shalo. Now, you might ask, if I'm mafresh truma from your grains and I didn't get rishus to do so, obviously I'm not in the driver's seat to be mafresh truma on your behalf. So why did I need this Mishnah? What's the chiddush of this Mishnah? And the answer is that the Torah says aser tiaser es kol tvuas zaracha velo shel acher. And you cannot be mafrish, truma and maser, on behalf of someone else without his explicit agency, without him signing on that you'll be his agent. And ma atem ledatchem af shluchachem ledatchem. You might have thought that, you know, if I'm going to be mafrish, truma on your behalf, I'm doing you a favor. No. There's no such thing as doing favors. Hatorim esheinu shalo, that's not a valid afrosh. I have to be appointed as a shliach. Now, case number four is Nachri Shetoram Es Shel Yisrael. Right, so we're talking about a goy. A goy's hafrosha is not included in hafrosha because it says Atem Gam Atem Ma Atem Bnei Bris Afshluchachem Bnei Bris. So you cannot appoint a non-Jew as a shliach, and his hafrosha's truma is not valid. And that's going to be the last case. So we have Cheresh, Shote, Katan, we have Torah Eshein Shalo, and we have Nochri Shetor Misrael Afilu Birshusa. In all these cases, the truma is invalid. My lecheresh yoivle. So now we know that a cheresh is completely excluded, right? A cheresh is completely excluded. Okay then. And if a cheresh is excluded, then we now have a question of who's better. You know, sending it with a cheresh to carry this pocketbook or sending it with a katan? My, what's the law? L'cheresh yoivle. Should we send it with a cheresh? Because as Jerry said before, it's very dangerous to send it with a katan. Katan osi l'chlal das. He's going to become a bar das and a bar mitzvah, so we don't want to send it with him. Oh, Dilma, lekatan yavle, the cheresh osel lechlufe begadol pikeach. If you send it with a cheresh, then somebody might confuse it and think that you could send it with a gadol who is a pikeach. And the Gemara concludes by saying, Ikad the Amri, according to one tradition, lecheresh yavlo, we would rather send it with a cheresh. And Ika Diyamri, a second tradition, has it that Lekotan Yoivlo, we'd rather send it with a Kotan. The Gemara asks the following question: If Ein Sham Lo Nachri Velo Chamor Velo Cherish Velo Shot Velo Kotan, none of the five options that we mentioned are available, not a guy, not an animal, no other chari shalt v'kot. My, what, is there any eitzah? What should we do? Rabbi Yitzchak od acheres hoy. So there's another possibility. The Chacham did not want to reveal it. My od acheres hoy. What was that other option if he doesn't have any of the five options that we mentioned? And the Chacham wanted to keep this classified information. Molicho pachos pachos mi'arba amos. He's actually allowed to carry his pocketbook and stop every two amos. And he never did an akira at the beginning of Dalet Amos and a hanocha at the end of Dalet Amos, because every time he stops, that's another hanocha and he has to start with another akira. But the Chacham wanted to keep this classified information. They didn't want to publicize this because Amayla Rotsu Chalmala Galosu Mishum Kvod Elokim Haster Dovar Ukvod Malachim Chakor Dovar. We're allowed to keep Torah concealed, if necessary, for Kvod Shomayim. We should never conceal Torah for the covet of a rich person or some significant person. We should always dissect the Torah and analyze it, but there's certain Kvod Shomayim Torah which we want to leave out. Why would it be Kvod Shomayim to conceal this possibility of carrying it two amos and then two amos? Dilma Asi Lasuyarba Amos Mishisarabha. In this trip, in this distance that he's carrying, he's not going to remember, oh, I got to stop every two Amos. He'll forget himself and he'll carry four Amos, and before you know it, he violated the Moloch of Havor. Tanya, we learned in the Brisa of Elazar Omer, Bo Bayom. Remember that day, back on Daf Yud Zayin, we learned about the Xeros of the Chachamim. And it's actually a long sugya there that begins on Yud Aleph, Yud Beis, Yud Gimel, goes on and on. And on that very day, they were up in the attic of Hananya ben Chizkia, and they instituted no less than 18 gzeros. And one of them was that in a case where he gets stuck with his pocketbook, and he has no guy to send it with, he should not carry his pocketbook pachos pachos mi'arba amos, he should send it with a nachri. And we're not going to reveal to him the fallback position in the absence of a nachri, etc., that he can carry it two amos. That was the gzera. We're afraid that if we allow him to carry it two amos, he'll carry it four amos. And here, the Brisa records a machlokes between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yoshua. Rabbi Eliezer was of the opinion that Godshu saw. They added an extra, you know, when you have a measuring cup and you want to give magnanimously, you add something on top, a heap. And this extra heap was very meaningful and very appropriate. We really have to worry about a person. If he carries the two amas, he'll come to carry it for us. Yeshua Omer, Bo Bayom Machaku saw. What you end up with is less than the amount, the measurement that could have been held by this utensil. Instead of overflowing, you lessen it. And basically what Rabbi Yeshua is arguing is that he doesn't think that this was a good idea to institute this gzera. This is too much, because the people are not going to be able to be omed on such a gzera. And if you don't allow him to carry it two amos and stop, and then another two amos, he'll end up carrying it the whole way through, because Adam Bol al Mamono, he doesn't want to lose his money. Tanya, and this machlokas is also codified in another braisa, Moshel de Rabbi Eliezer, Lema Dover Dome. Rabbi Eliezer, with regard to this gzera that we shouldn't allow him to carry it two amos and then stop and then another two amos, it's Lekupa Malea Kishuim Vidluim. Imagine you have a basket that's full of different kinds of gourds and different kinds of vegetables, Adam Nosin Lesocha Chardol V'machzekes, right, where there are air spaces between the Kishuim and the Dluim, they're not going to remain solid in that place within the basket unless you put in these little mustard seeds to fill up the holes. And that's very good, and that's going to allow it to be a Dovra Meskayim, as we'd say, we'll continue. But Marshal to Rabbi Yeshua said with regard to this Gzeira of not carrying it every two hours, Lema Dovredom, it's similar to Areva. Areva is a bowl, Malea Dvash, it's full of honey. No saying Adam Latocha Rimonim Vagozim. If a person all of a sudden stuffs it, you know, stuffs into this bowl larger nuts, walnuts, and pomegranates, that he may kia. At the end of the day, what's going to happen is that the because of the volume that you're putting in, the honey is going to overflow. And so basically, Rabbi Yeshua was the opponent to this gzera, because ain't other mamid atzmal mamono, and if you don't allow him to carry it 2 amos and stop, etc., he's going to end up carrying it 4 amos. Omar Mar, the Mishnah said him, ein imo nochri menichal chamor, how can we allow the chamor to carry the pocketbook? Ve'halo mechamer, v'rachman omar lo tasekho molochatu bemtecho. There's an iser to have an animal do moloch on your behalf, and now the animal is carrying something, so the animal is doing meleches hotzah. Omar avadavar ava, you know what the Mishnah has in mind, menichal lekshima leches. He starts the animal moving, the animal picks up its legs, and immediately he puts the pocketbook on the top of the back of the animal, so that the animal never did what we would call an akira on the pocketbook. Why? Because the animal was already in motion at the time that the pocketbook was placed down on its back. So the Gemara says, why efshar delo kaima? You know, at some point the animal is gonna stop dead in its tracks. Why? Lahashtin mayim. Maybe it has to urinate or lahatil glolin to remove excrements. Vika kirava nocha. The very moment the animal stops, it terminates the original carrying, and now the animal starts going further, and that's a new akira, and it's gonna put it down later in the hanocha. So the animal is doing a meleches hotzah for you. And the answer is kshima leches menichol leha, ukshi omedes not la imena. What he's going to have to do is he's going to have to make sure the animal's in motion when he puts down the pocketbook. And then when he sees that the animal is standing in order to urinate, for example, he immediately removes the pocketbook from its back and waits till the animal finishes urinating, starts walking, and then he puts the pocketbook back on its back. Ihachi, if you can play those types of tricks, is afilu chaveru nami. Why should we go a step further and allow this kind of trick to go on with another Jew? You know, I'll wait till the Jew starts walking, then I'll put the pocketbook on his back as he's walking, and when he stops, I'm going to take off the pocketbook, and when he starts again, I'll put the pocketbook back on. And we could do this kind of trick even with a live human being. Why do we need an animal for that? Omar Rav Papa, kol shegufo chayv chatas b'chaveru pota aval osu. In a sense, we have to look at the situation and evaluate it. If he himself would, chas v'shalom, forget to do this akira hanocha situation, where he keep taking it off and putting it back on, he would be violating a molacha d'oraisa and a full-fledged chiyuv molacha with a chiyuv chatas, etc. Therefore, in a case where we might be afraid that he won't put it back on and take it back off, that's going to be also the rabbanu potter aval osu. We don't want to do that. But in the case of an animal, kol shechaveru potter aval osu b'chamoro mutal chatchila, when it comes to the chamor, since if the chamor would have been a human being, it would have been osu the rabbanon, and that isu the rabbanon we could alleviate in the case of an animal, because in the case of an animal, we're not talking about a possibility of violating a malacha d'oraisa. You know, the animal, the chamor, is not chayav achatos. Omar Rav Adbar Rav Ahoysa Chavilaso Munachas Lo Ksefo. If a person on Erev Shabbos loads something on his back and all of a sudden he sees it's after Shkia, what should he do? Ratz Tachteho. He should continue running. He did not make an Akira on Shabbos. And Achim Agila Beso, then he could put it down in his house because he did not do an Akira Hamachayevis on Shabbos. Dafka Ratz Avokal Kali, if he's walking slowly, low. Why? My time. What's the difference between whether he's walking slowly or he's running? Kema de Lesley Hakera, if he is walking slowly, there's nothing to remind him. He may at some point stop dead in his tracks, do a hanocha, then start walking again. But in the case where we tell him run, he's going to realize that he has to run without stopping. The halacha is requiring him to do this running. That's Ikeira. So that's going to remind him. Sof, the Gemara asks, Ki matul abesi efshar delo kai purta. When he gets to his house, he's going to have to stop before he enters into the door. He can't fly right into the opening of the door. And then the very moment that he stops, he's going to be carrying it from Rishus HaRabim into his private domain. And the Gemara says, we're going to require him Zorek Lei Kelachar Yad. We're going to require that when he gets to his house, he turns his back around, and before he even stops, he throws the object into his house backwards. And therefore, he doesn't violate Melechas Otso. Omar Rami Bar Choma Machamarach Behemto B'Shabbos B'Shogeg Chayv Chatos B'Meizik Chayv Skil. An amazing revolution of Rami Bar Choma, that if you have your animal carry for you on Shabbos, then you're Chayv Skila. And in Shogeg Chayv Chatos, my time, Omar Rava Di Omar Kro Lo Sasekom Melacha To Behemto Cho. And the Torah, when it prohibits a human being, a Jew, from doing malach, it adds ata, you and your behema. The Torah is combining an animal and comparing it to a human being. Ma hu bishoge chayv chatos ubemezit chayv skilo af behemto nami bishoge chayv chatos ubemezit skilo. We see from this equation that even if your animal is doing the malach, you're chayv. But Omar Rava, Rava says, I have a question, two questions on Rami Bar Choma. Shtei tshuvas bedavar, two objections. Chada, number one, it says in the parasha of Shogeg, the paradigm of Shogeg for which Yechayv Achatus is the parasha of Avodah Zorah. And in the parasha of Avodah Zorah, Bamidbar Tesvav, it says, Torah achas yelachem li oseh bishgaga, oseh bishgaga, hanefesh asher tasa biyad ramah, v'nichrus hanefesh yimi kerev hameo. And this is going to be the paradigm for all Chiyuvei Chatos, because it says Torah achas. Hukshah, we have a hekesh of kol tor kula avodah zorah. Ma avodah zorah diovid maisa megufei. Right, the Torah says in avodah zorah, he did an action, one of the four avodos. And that's why it says in the pasuk, asher tasa biyad ramah. Is so too, any chiyuv karbon for an osa bishkaga has to be with an asiyah. But, right? Hokedami here in all other averos of the 36 averos that generate a chatos, it has to be Adiyavid Maisa Begufa, he has to do an action with his body. But Machamer, it's the animal that's doing the Maisa, and therefore there's no Chiyuv Chatos V'yoda. My second objection is this Nan. We have a Mishnah in Sanhedrin, and the Mishnah says, Amachalos HaShabbos B'dover Shechayom Al Shkigos of Chatos, Al Zdono Skila. And the Mishnah seems to imply that there is something where if you're Machal Shabbos, you will, in a case of Shogi B'Chayiv Chatos, and there is something that doesn't fit that category, Michlal. We have a dayik that ika midi. There are certain cases. The ein chayov in al shigugos al chatos v'lo'al zdono skila. That there are situations in which you violate the Shabbos and you're not going to be chayav chatos in a case of shogging. You're not going to be chayav skila in a case of mezid. Umay ninu. What could be that case where the Torah prohibited it and yet by virtue of adir from the Mishnah we derive the conclusion that you're not chayav chatos? And the answer is, my ninu, lav de mechaber. It must be the love of having your animal work for you. So the Gemara says, lo, maybe it's tchumen. And tchumen is a case where you violate the Torah law for Shabbos, and yet you're not chayev echatos or skila. Valib the Rabbi Kiva. Rabbi Kiva is of the opinion in Masechta Sota and elsewhere that tchumen is doraisa. So another opportunity is Havara alib the Rabbi Yossi, because Rabbi Yossi holds Havara le lav yotzis, which means that burning a fire on Shabbos is only a lav. So, Mirz Hashem, tomorrow we'll start Daf Kuf Nun Dalid Amid Aleph. And I'll wish you a great day and thank you so much.